Everyone, welcome to the technically special meeting of the Emergency Preparedness Committee of the Kensington Fire Protection District. It is April 25th at 4:03 p.m. in the Community Center, Room 3. I'm calling the meeting to order. Meeting with the directors, Director Menudo,
Yes.
and I'm Director Levine, and I'm here. Public members, Director, excuse me, not Director, Doug Bennington.
Hello.
Lisa Corrine says she's not here. Katie Buck, also not here yet. Peter Will
Here.
Paul Moss,
Here.
James Bath.
Yeah.
And we've left off also our newest member, Adrienne Johnson, who is joining us remotely. So we'll also have to move to allow her to participate remotely. So I move to allow Adrienne Johnson to participate remotely.
Second.
All in favor?
Yes.
All right. All opposed? Great. Motion carries. Welcome, Adrienne. We move to public comment. Sounded like
Okay.
you had a comment.
I do. Okay. I've been running earthquake scenarios for the state for the last couple of months. And you know, they are kind of they usually involve a large area in multiple counties, but I happen to run a test case for Kensington Plains for the Haywire scenario, which is just over a 7. And of course, the Haywire runs right through. But this is so some of the interesting things is that you know we have a total of 2,000 and almost 2,300 buildings in Kensington. Of those, 2,000 are pretty much residents, single family residents, and I hope explanation. Okay, so. At least 240 buildings will be at least moderately damaged, and that is over 11% of the buildings in the region. And there are an estimated 37 buildings that will be damaged beyond repair. The definition of damage states is something different, but it's generally none to complete. And so moderate means it's going to be significant. So that was interesting. The HAZES does calculate casualties. And by casualties, it can be it's deaths, but also
Injuries.
injuries. Thank you. It's like maybe what is I have that too. I think I should have. Let's. So far, what was 3 months. We might have one casualty. Okay. I don't have I did say that our school was not going to be functional after the first day, and that it was only going to have 0.7% functionality. So that means, actually, that's a difference, right?
Is that a surprise? The school going to be fall down?
Not functional. Yeah, it's in like no utilities, no
Oh, gotcha.
water. I mean, it
What does it say in the public safety?
well, so the public safety building is in, and it's damaged. Its architecture has not been upgraded yet. So buildings and So there's a building stock, and the building stock classifies buildings according to code that they're built to. And so, of course, it said it's destroyed. But the problem is that it is based on the old
Right.
code pre-renovation. I could actually could go in there, change the code, and see how it would run the table.
Would be interesting because
Yeah.
you may recall that the risk assessment was done by a seismic company that indicated that there would be some damage to the building depending upon the size of the earthquake, and it would be non-functional from anywhere for about 3 months to a whole year.
Yeah, and I don't get that kind of.
Okay.
I've got a little.
I suppose it depends on the size of the earth.
Yeah, it also depends on. So the way the scenarios are developed is that in general, they'll do a model of the fault, and then they'll have an epicenter all along the fault line. And then it'll then you have, you know, stations recording the, how much motion or acceleration there is, and then they'll just keep all the median ground motion. So for so not the highest, not the lowest, but it'll be for all these different earthquakes, because you get your reflectivity effects. If you rupture from the south part of the fault and it starts to rupture to the north, well, it's like a shark, you know, a bunch of sharks. If you're moving fast, you're still leaving a wake behind you, as it ruptures, it's headed towards you, and the waves come out in front, and they push them, so they all like stack up. That analogy worked way better than I have, I think. You know, we should all hope that the epicenter is under not a single thing. And so that way it'll rupture away from us in it'll be at least under that. So I might be able to do that.
I'm just curious if that what we're
I was wondering, in terms of that modeling, these days under these conditions, is there a concern about houses catching fire from the earthquake effects?
It models fires post earthquake, and that is like that model is not totally accurate. I mean, it's based on data from other previous earthquakes. So, and I'm not totally familiar with how it works, but considering that this study region was literally just the two census tracts of Kensington, it's left, it did model that there would not be any fire post earthquake. But to apply that model to such a small area doesn't really, it's like apples and oranges. So I'm actually running the Haywire for cost, and I'll probably see how many fire post earthquakes it actually models. But
this is probably not. Well, we're there, but we have any idea how many people have gas shutoffs? Their house? After an earthquake?
I'm not sure. I would think that PG&E would. I mean, because
they don't do it as private contractors. Instead, you have to contact them. They're only a couple that do that work in the area.
Oh, I want to start a project. Here's some of the numbers. Let's see. Hazards estimates that there are 2,000 buildings in the region which have an aggregate total replacement value of
$1,275,000.
Okay. So
it's $1,000,000. Okay. So I say $1,000,000 is like
1,000. Yeah, that's a good point. So just think of the losses and the damage, and actually they give me this calculate the building loss numbers.
Does that assume that there's been no seismic retrofitting of any house? Or did they give a certain percentage of that model?
So if a house has been retrofit and it's been reported to the county and it's in their county, you know, database, that whole building stock for California has been updated. So it should raise the code level, and the most recent updated hazards adds these extra higher code building codes or higher severity building codes. So retrofitting is kind of part of that. Like if you build a new house or you retrofit to a higher code, now the hazards can accommodate modeling damage to a house that's built to a higher code. And when it does that, it makes it so that it doesn't break. But all it accounts for all the damage from inside of the house and stuff breaking. So it increases the debris generated but not necessarily the amount of the houses, number of houses damaged doesn't change because that house performs well. Anyway, if I can find that number for you, I will. It just for coming from. I wanted to be a little more prepared. I was also excited.
That's really amazing. Looking forward to it.
Yeah, I should probably try to do a little post online or something. Or at least bring you guys more information.
If you want to write up like a executive one page executive summary.
Yes, because no one else is going to go by the second page. So
Other comments and.
Well, I would only note that as you were talking before, that the local health innovation plan, the drafts, all districts are on the county website now, along with the county plan and all the other jurisdictions that are participating. Residents have the opportunity to review them and make comment on the county website.
Mm-hmm.
And usually, has this earthquake scenarios and stuff like that. These models are required for a required part of the local hazard mitigation plans for like a county.
Mm-hmm.
So, because that's what I used to do when I worked at a consulting firm. We would do these, run these hazard scenarios, these earthquake scenarios for like cities who were doing their safety element portion of their hazard mitigation.
I would also just mention that FEMA is responding more effort for public input into the plans, more than apparently they did in 2018. Both, not just social media input, but those in public forums to discuss the plans with residents. And you may not have known, but the county held a meeting in Kensington at the library last night. You guys having a meeting to talk about the county plan. They never really, I mean, they didn't announce it well at all. My board has no knowledge of it. I'm sure you looked at it.
No. Julie Stein made a good observation because they were presenting at a KMAC meeting, and a KMAC meeting should have had an agenda posted 72 hours in advance, but no one seemed to see that.
Yeah.
Sasha didn't exist, is what I mean to say.
So what's the brown end?
Maybe they'll come back.
There are other locations if you would like to attend.
Oh, actually,
I just said that.
If you go to their website, they're all listed.
Yes, we're actually the.
The county website.
If you Google LHMP Contra Costa County, that worked for me. It was like the first result.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a tonight. There's one in Rodeo. Tomorrow there's one on virtual. That's nice. May 7th, there's one in North Richmond. May 8th, there's one in El Sobrante. May 14th, there's one in Bethel Island. May 15th, another virtual one, / also one in Pleasant Hill. And on May 21st, one in Knightson.
And these are all focused on the county.
Yes.
As opposed to the local jurisdiction. Local.
So, other opportunities.
I wonder how well attended it was.
Yep. Did you
want to
say something, Paul?
Oh, no, I'm just scratching me. Nobody else will.
all right. Any other comments? Moving on to the approval of minutes from our last meeting. Thank you for preparing these.
I have a question about the minutes.
Yes, please.
Item 5B,
mm-hmm.
The third bullet item. Excuse me, actually the second. Yeah. Well, this talk influence question to be presented to the KPFB board that addresses vegetation management, and so forth and so on. Director Lugo volunteered to collect responses and share with the full KFPB board. Why not the EPC first? Just as a few of us did when we came up with the evacuation plan. Why is that going direct, or is that a typo? Is it going right to the list to the KFPD, or is it going to be run by this committee?
I don't remember what was discussed.
That's all. I'm reading right from the minutes.
I thought it was supposed to come back to.
I thought so too. Yeah.
Seems like
you have been sent to.
Yeah, I thought so too. Okay. I just don't remember. This is the minutes, right? So
yeah,
that's the I don't remember what we said last time. So.
Okay. So that should be changed to committee, I would think.
Well, you know, just that this is the people got that it was that we discussed that it would come back here first.
My sense, well, two things. My sense was yes, it would. And Danielle had indicated that she was going to collect it and set up a Google Docs to not involve. And Lisa and I met and put some questions together and sent them off to Danielle.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And I made a Google Doc.
Okay.
Yeah, I made a Google Doc.
Okay.
And did I send? I invite you.
Bottom line, it was supposed to come back here.
Then it sounds like that was the understanding. So we can make that. Is there any other comments that people want to make on the next? In that case,
what was that item number again?
Second bullet item 5B. H2.
So I move to accept the meeting minutes of the March 28th meeting with the modification that on the second bullet point of item 5B, collect responses and share with the full KFPD board should be changed to say collect responses, share with the full EPC for later dissemination to the KFPD. Do I have a second?
I'll second.
All right. Discussion. All in favor?
Aye.
Moving on from the minutes, the draft work plan. So we brought our work plan as we updated it at our last meeting to the full board for our regular meeting. Our regular meeting went very late, so we did not have a chance to discuss it, although we discussed it our meeting last night, that we will discuss it at a meeting on May 6th. so many meetings, 7 Mike. But there was general, it sounded like the board was interested and they were excited by our plan and I view it as discussed last night, directors who are not us, view it as a framework for sort of goal setting for the greater district going forward. That sounds like an endorsement to me.
One suggestion on the plan under the LRADs, where we talk about questions, resources needed. What I think is missing is actually costing and design. Because if we're talking about grant writing, we need to
have a cost estimate. Sure. I guess I view the work plan as a framework, if not an exhaustive list.
Right.
But yes, this is true. That will have to be addressed. That's out of that. Tim, did you want to add anything?
No, I don't think so. I think the board wanted to discuss it further.
Yeah. new business. Communication with the State Regional Parks District.
Yeah, I wrote a report for you on phone calls I've had with these state parks along the goals that we have to reduce fuels, build a park, work together with them. And I was glad to talk to these folks. Patrick McIntyre, who has worked with the Sierra's group to give them the permission needed to go on and clear some weeds, was very knowledgeable about all these matters. And it's part of his job with the fire department of East Bay Parks. And he has a whole crew that does manual reduction of fuels, and he also contracts with folks and uses the goats, applies for grants. You know, this is a section of the fire department that does all that. I also was able to talk to the fire chief, and she was very open to a partnership with us to do more, to be able to show that we're doing more for our community here and have a measurable increase in fuel reduction. The assistant chief, Connie Helene, is going to work with me so that he can give a presentation to our board of directors who has asked for this, for a presentation from East Bay Parks on these topics. And I wanted to explore with him how would a partnership with us look. They're asking that question of me. What do we want to do to partner with them for a net gain in safety for our community here with fuel reduction along the bridge line? So I think we should discuss things like that. What does a partnership look like? Our board members, some have said we need to allocate more money toward this function to try and get a better result. Mm-hmm. And so I perk up because anytime you can bring money to the table for a partnership with somebody, that's a good thing. Although, you know, they're used to so much more money than mm-hmm. we're used to. But they're certainly open to that. They just want to know, you know, get their hands around what a partnership would look like and feel like. So we should talk about things we want to accomplish. And if it's just an increase in the frequency of what they're already doing, and we would contribute resources to that, that could be it. If it's more volunteer work parties on our part with community members, that could be a component of it. If it's paying for more visits by the goats, that could be a part of it. One of the main things of them making a presentation at the board would be to identify all the things they're currently doing in Tilden Park and what they're planning to do. It's a very large park district, and they have a very large budget for fuel reduction and clearing throughout the whole system. So, you know, at this presentation, they would talk about Tilden Park in particular. But I would, before they do that, I would like to throw some things on the table to negotiate sort of what a partnership would look like. So I'm open to your feedback and suggestions on how to formulate that. You might have had things in mind for a long time. So,
well, I would suggest you look at the partnership with Arinda Moraga Fire District has created the park district in East Bay Park, and their grant acquisition and the rather sizable fire break that they've created off Arinda into this too. And they partnered significantly. I think that's the type of thing, certainly, that some of your board members, Jim's water particular interest. So that would be one example of the partnership that I would like. And secondly, you know, there is another grant season coming up for CAL FIRE that will probably start in November. They'll be putting out probably more than $100 million. Last year was $117 million for grants. So that's another benefit of the partnership if you're doing a joint grant.
They devote a lot of time to trying to get grants and outside money to do what they need to do.
Right.
So they could, on our behalf, include us.
Yeah. And I think the grant people look favorably on multi jurisdictional partnership.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well,
today, even the trash, I can still fish it out. It's outdated now. I think it was from 2012, and it was an entire book on wildfire grants. And so that I'd be glad to pass along.
Yes.
So we can still investigate, but we're going to see it's formulated now. But I'd also like to find out what the chiefs have in mind, see if are these things that are within our scope and what we can actually handle, and the financial aspects. So I'd like to see what kids and their needs. So I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Yeah, they don't have anything specific other than doing what they're continuing to do and trying to do. So they're looking for ideas of what a partnership would look like for them. They're very open.
And we're very open.
Yeah, so exactly. We'll have to learn more about the Arundel projects.
One thing that I mentioned at our meeting last night that I come back to, which is who is really an expert at what should be done at a... So East Bay Regional Parks has what they're willing to do now, and that fits in their scope and their budget, what sort of they feel like taking on, right? But that doesn't necessarily mean it's the right thing or the best thing or something that they would be able to do something else if someone else wanted to do the logistical legwork on. We don't really have the ability to do a lot of logistical legwork in Kensington Fire District because we're really tiny. But my question is, is there some third-party consultant who, can or has the expertise to look at our particular interface between Kensington and, Tilden, and describe what should be done or what maybe best practices are for that particular interface? Because I certainly don't know what that is, right? If you gave me a grant tomorrow for $150 million and said, do whatever you want, I don't know what to do with that. And I don't know that East Bay Regional Parks, if you gave me a grant $150 million, they would do necessarily what would be the best thing, because they would do what fits within their scope as a park district. So can we find some, is there an expert out there? Do these consultants exist? I have to assume they do, to analyze our particular situation and make recommendations which could inform both of us to move forward, because I'm just not sure, who advocates for Kensington when I don't know that any person currently affiliated with the board or in this room can actually honestly say that, oh yeah, I know exactly what needs to happen and can happen and is the best thing to do.
I would think that the park district has done this. And I'd be almost disappointed, frankly, if they hadn't used
their
partners themselves in the past. To some extent, they say, we're planning to do this, we have this much money, this is what we're going to do. Do you guys, and some yeah, they would be paid as a consultant to reassess it, to evaluate it, as you're pointing out, as a third party. I would think they've done this to some extent, besides having their own.
I could certainly ask them.
Yeah.
Feedback about that.
How about reaching out to Berkeley and asking if they already have any information?
Oh, that's a good point.
They've been a source of a lot of good, valuable information from, because they have the money to pay them and that we didn't.
Mm.
And they're very generous.
I'm sorry, reach out to who?
Berkeley.
Oh, Berkeley.
City of
Berkeley. Yeah, Whitaker, Dave Whitaker. Marinda, I mean, he was extremely helpful to David on the submission, but he shared this
information. Yeah, that
information
they already
made. I think it's
that would be there. He's with the Fire.
He's the fire chief.
The fire chief.
Yeah.
Well, what I don't understand is why we wouldn't be using the expertise of the El Cerrito Fire Department, the fire chief, and others, the battalion chief who's responsible for,
fire
marshal. I mean, and you can use the Marinda example. Whitaker was in the lead in that, getting grants for a fire. So obviously, his knowledge, he applied that to the grant process and had in mind what type of fire break was necessary. This ridgeline doesn't end at the Kensington board, it goes into El Cerrito. I would certainly like to understand from Chief Sailors and his staff what they think as to the need for a fire break both in our jurisdiction and their jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. They're the experts.
So I think they would almost certainly be involved in this kind of discussion.
Right, but my point being, I don't know that there's a need to go and get a consultant when you have the expertise within the fire department.
But that can be brought up as a possibility. That's all I think of right now.
I would like to get this information centralized in this room, right? I don't think if Rice told us, hey, we got a grant tomorrow for $150 million, do we know what we're going to do? Can we the information, even if it exists and we have access to it, we need to get it.
Go to them first.
Well, you can't write a grant without knowing.
Sure, Johnny?
Yeah, I just wanted to remind everyone, just in case some people aren't aware, but Fire Marshal Chase Beckman came from CAL FIRE, so he's got pretty extensive knowledge about wildland fuel loadings, and he's involved in a monthly, and I attended this meeting too, in a monthly meeting that involves region chiefs, East Bay Regional Parks, East Bay MUD, and Diablo Fire Safe Council in a meeting that's called the Hills Emergency Forum. So that may be a great opportunity for Fire Marshal Chase Beckman to engage Berkeley and the other surrounding agencies to bring this up.
I guess the other thing I'm thinking about in my engineer consultant is I really don't want to add anything to Tim's point in terms of aggregating all of this data and chasing down, we just named like 7 people to reach out to.
Focusing on what's the best use of time to get the most effect is, mm-hmm. is a challenge for the review of the discussion. Here are the questions that Lisa provided to me and asked for input on were really great questions, and these are ones that I just naturally come out in conversations with people I'm talking with. So we're all on the same page, I think, about what we want to try and get from this relationship with these big parks.
Can you read those questions?
Yes. What are East Bay Parks' existing plans and timelines for fire fuel management along the Kensington border, which are things the presentation would tell us? What are the full range of possible actions for fuel removal and a fire break? What are the known environmental limitations to creating a fire break? Any endangered species? And that's one that probably all the 3 people I've talked to there have mentioned. Getting the permits are difficult. Being able to do the work that's really needed within permits can be quite a challenge. And they spend quite a bit of time.
Because of species issue.
Yes.
Did they happen to clarify?
They were in California.
Yeah, but I was curious if they mentioned specific species.
No, they didn't. No, just in general. They were proud that they already have a permit for a scope of work that they weren't able to do before. And maybe it's a statewide permit or something. Interesting. I don't have specifics, but that was the tenor of that.
They're usually required to do environmental impact studies. Mm-hmm. That's their term.
Well, and Rinda, in their project, had a biologist.
Yeah, same thing. Just to do that.
Mm-hmm. Obviously. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, clearing dead trees and things can be a problem because they've created a habitat for animals. Mm-hmm. What was the process for the fuel breaks accomplished in Moraga Rinda as an example? We just talked about that. What are the financial opportunities and limitations of creating fire break, protecting our elementary school and residences? And how best can both Kensington districts, police and fire, partner with these state parks and move the goal forward? So, good question.
I did share that, Dr. Lucy. It's
to
your Gmail.
Yeah. Okay.
I just checked.
I'll ask a provocative question. Another question that always comes to my mind is if we have, instead of $150 million, if we have limited resources, is a fuel break the most effective thing to do, or is there's some security theater in this, that it's a very visible thing that you can do, but maybe not the most effective thing you can do. I don't really answer that question.
That's not provocative. We were just discussing that.
Yeah, I think it's a very valid question. There are ways of cutting that can be performative, and you know, you see something go on, you say there's less fuels, but you know, it plays out in different ways. I remember being on a panel with the fire chief from Montecito, and someone was actually asking about like even cutting eucalyptus trees, and he said that as long as the tree was, you know, had a sufficient water source, they I think he said they never recommended cutting trees. Because the point that he was emphasizing in that context, and there's some nuance that not conveying there, but what he emphasized is the ways that trees can act as a barrier to ember showers. Mm. You assume of them as a source, but they can actually, in significant part, be a barrier. And there have been times when there's been cutting on a fire trail that I wasn't involved with and so forth, where I was left wondering about the impacts of it, because it seemed like trees that could have potentially been sort of screens to limit everflow were removed and could make it easier for embers to get over the ridge and into the community. Mm-hmm. That would be one risk. I think the other thing that stood out for me as I walked along that trail is, I mean, with anything that we're talking about here, you know, I think we're reasonably assuming that it's fire from Tilden. So we're talking about fire coming from upslope. And generally, I think the idea with fuel breaks hasn't been the idea that they just do it on their own, that they stop fire on their own, is highly oversold. I think that it's more credibly said, well, firefighters can use those as a place to position themselves and fight the fire. But if you're positioning that on an upslope area, if we were, say, to treat the old school trail as that, as best as I can tell, that's just setting up a situation of roasting firefighters. Mm-hmm. You don't want to be
directly above
a fire. The heat is rising, the flame is moving fast, all that sort of thing. So offhand, those are things where I wonder, like, I can imagine the people of Kensington looking at that and saying, hey, we're safer because those trees were taken down and we have this partial sort of fuel break thing along the old school trail, but in ways that I think in practice either can't be used the way they need to be used or could actually lead to greater ember flows. So I'm glad you're asking that question.
There's all these things that are clear in my head, and that's sort of why I was like, who is the expert to answer these questions, right?
We can see what East Mutual Park has done, and they haven't cut trees now, but they cleaned out and left some trees while taking others down to reduce the fire hazard, if you will. And I think you could learn from North Arinda. You could talk to the sailors and his people to get a better sense of what is reasonable and what works, into your point, that maybe doesn't make a lot of sense to have a big fire break in that area. Or it may slow the fire down, which will allow people to go back to it. So, I mean, there are a number of scenarios, but we don't have the expertise, but I would hope that fire and would have that, you know, with expertise and knowledge, you know?
And I think when you do fire breaks, you think of some of our major highways that basically have big houses.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you have this big fire, almost it jumps such and such freeway, or it's south of the freeway. So I always think of those as a fire break. You can kind of gauge like how useful. But then again, it all depends on, you know, the fire, so many things are different. Right? But I always think, when I think of fires, I always think of major freeways.
And I think one challenge to this discussion is, I think that the most common than it, for the reasons I was discussing, logical place for a fuel break is right on the ridge line.
Mm-hmm.
But in Kensington context, I think that's all outside of the park jurisdiction.
And on private property.
But because, yeah, because of the problems I just described, it's not like, oh, well, let's get the closest area to the park to the ridge line. Doesn't work because you're still in that.
It's possible that the best place for a fuel break is 100 feet or 200 feet down the slope from Kensington, maybe, where it sort of starts leveling out, maybe. I don't know.
Well, there's something else to consider is the slope stability. And depending on that side of the hill, all hills around here are susceptible to slope slides, mm-hmm. shallow and large. But in particular, that, I mean, you can look across the valley and see all the little shallow slope. That's only going to be so much worse if they wholeheartedly clear that entire stuff. It's going to be bad.
Yeah. And this is the other reason why I feel like we need to get all this information for Kensington in one place, is also so that when there's someone say, why haven't you clear cut the entire side of the hill there? You don't want to just answer, well, we didn't have the money for it. You want to be able to say, we consulted the experts and they said, for the love of God, don't do that. So, you know, it's not just a question about what we can and should be doing, but also it's good to know what we shouldn't be doing and be able to tell people why we're doing the things we're doing and why we're not doing other things. Because I think, well, we certainly, I don't want to say zealous, but like we have a lot of enthusiastic residents, and it's sort of lame just be like, oh, I don't know why we didn't do that. Maybe we should.
One more thing to maybe dig up some more expertise. When we did the hazard mitigation plans the last time, the fire one was done by Michael Long, right? And Dave Gibson was also a wealth of material for getting away from fires. And they might still be around and might be interested. They might be less expensive than someone coming from a firm. But I mean, just, we're not going to get it for nothing, but maybe get seasoned, knowledgeable people to give us some.
So this person, Dave Bond?
It's Michael Bond and Dave Gibson.
They're both work for the Elsweedo Fire Department. Again, I'll belabor the point. You have an expert group in the Elsweedo Fire
Department. In-house.
In-house. Why you would spend money outside of that without talking to them first, and also these different departments, who I'm sure are quite knowledgeable about the firebreak issues and whether it makes any sense to clear cut the area for 200 foot back.
I think you're right. We should go for $0, just guys can help us out with getting started here. And then maybe if we need to.
Well, I would stop first in the other way. I will stop with the fire department and East Bay Regional Park.
Well, that's what I mean. Those are the two things that.
That's what we should do. Just so, the Mayfield Firewise group, they had Chase Beckman, the fire marshal. Chase Beckman, fire marshal, and then they had Lex Mercosta, landscape people, landscape management, also in that meeting. And then they talked about how they wanted to manage that slope at the top of the hill right next to the school, which was a school slope. I think we could, let's get Chase involved in meeting with, who's the other person? I had it in my mind.
Patrick McIntyre?
Yes.
Yeah.
Why don't we get them together and then get another group together? Can we?
Yeah. Well, I intend to meet with Chief Sailors.
Okay.
On an approach, and that, and I'll discuss that part as well. I think a centralized approach and methodology is best for us, and so I can kind of be a hit point for this. And really get advice about what methods would be impactful for the safety of our original and see if they match up to what East Bay has been doing in the park.
Is that something you're comfortable taking on at this time?
Yeah, I'll allocate some time to it and report back how it's going. These things don't happen overnight, but talking to the right people doesn't take much time.
Okay.
And but I think it's all in the context of developing a set of things we're asking East Bay to do as a partner, and what we're willing to do. So I think developing that, and I'm anxious to get it started, to have an impact for the fall season kind of thing. But some things take longer to work out, but at least the planning part and the partnership will be done. So
great.
Maybe we can ask them how they can, reduce their ember load, which would hit us. But I mean, I do think of the eucalyptus trees, across the valley. Is there, what are they doing for the, how do you quantify ember load? I mean, I just see a bunch of.
Yeah, I haven't seen, the conversations I've seen have been more about the flow of it rather than the flush.
Okay.
So if you're not, particularly if you, a potential downside of opening things up is that there's greater wind speeds and more unobstructed wind flow that's carrying the network. So it's not really quantity of that work. It's what either interrupts them or slows the wind flow down so they don't carry as far.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks. That's a good discussion.
That's good.
And yeah. One public comment.
Oh, there's another comment.
Hello, my name is Scott Tipping, and I'm an El Cerrito citizen and member of Make El Cerrito Fire Safe, and I was interested in your conversation, and thanks for having your meeting. I've been very active in some of the similar efforts that y'all are doing, trying to make a shaded fuel break on our hillside natural area. We were able to get some Measure X funds and have done a portion of it, basically, we are using the El Cerrito Kensington Wildfire Action Plan that was developed in 2017 as a guideline for it, and has some very valuable information. It also identifies specific high priority areas in Kensington and El Cerrito, one of which is the Hillside Natural Area, but also where you're talking about. And I'm trying to get it a lot of people aren't aware of it. I don't know if y'all are aware of it, but it's worth a look and further discussion if y'all are interested in it. I'm going to continue to pursue working with it and getting it better implemented throughout various projects that we have going on.
Sounds very interesting, Scott. I can tell you, for one, I'm not aware of this document.
Yeah, there it is. I didn't know about that. Was it a workshop?
Yeah, we should look at that. It's a thing. It exists.
What's
next, Scott.
El Cerrito Hillside Natural Area Fire Resilience and Forest Conservation Plan and Public Workshop 1. So actually, this isn't the exact document.
No. Right? No, I just... Oh, did I... are you looking at what I emailed? I may have emailed the wrong attachment. Let's see.
Right. I didn't see an email.
I'll double check.
Is it the one with the green... cover, green and white.
Yes.
Cover with all
yes,
the
and Tim, I just emailed it to you, I believe.
Okay, good. Great. Thank you.
Thank you.
And so basically, it's a county part of, it's an addendum to the CWPP, which is the community wildfire prevention plan or something of that neighborhood. And then it's got some dead links in it and whatnot. It Diablo's Fire Safe kind of owns the document right now, and I'm just working to kind of get all the pieces back together and get it to be a more active thing. But it's got really good information, and fire hasn't changed that much. So hopefully you'll find it a resource. And I'd love to continue a conversation about it because I'm actively working on it. So if y'all are interested, I'd love to partner with you on it.
Great.
like you say, fire knows no borders. So
Well, thank you so much, Scott, for joining our meeting. If you'd like to join whenever, we would always enjoy other people in neighboring jurisdictions who want to work with us. So I full-throatedly encourage
thank you
to stick around whenever we also raise another thing that we're working on that we've been chatting with the chief about is trying to sort of reinvigorate CERC in the El Cerrito Kensington area. I don't know if you're involved with any of that, but we're also working on getting that off the ground.
Yeah, I actually am. I just got certified on CERT about a few months ago, and I also I'm going to become more active in Caro Echo. So I'm right in the beginning points of all that. And there's a bunch of splinter groups around in El Cerrito and elsewhere that are kind of trying to revitalize CERT. And I'm very interested in that as well. So I'd love to participate in that conversation.
That's great. Well, if you send your email to Tim, if you're okay with it, can he forward me your email so I can reach out?
Forwarded it to you and Danielle and this year. So I have received those messages.
Oh, thanks very much, Scott. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Any other public comments?
I actually just met with Jai and Chief Capone about CERT, but I wasn't expecting to speak today, so I was more interested in finding out how the group works.
Okay.
Kind of like this. More interested in finding out moving here from Colorado. Well, there already isn't a more mobilized version of CERT on the West Valley as there is. I just trained with Robert. So.
It's has a complex history.
That's what I'm hearing.
Yes, but we're working on Brita. All right.
Well, speaking of that, do we know where we are on the activity?
That
was a question. Sure. Remember, we were going to put together a public meeting.
So I put 6 hours in so far working on it. And then I decided I'm going to stop. Because I was at the meeting, and the chief was here on that particular Tuesday. And he said he was going to meet with him, Dave, the fire chief, I was going to set up a thing, person, time, schedule, and then we've got that meeting over here at the community center, and he's going to get that in the exchange. And I never heard from him. So I really don't feel that he has any great desire for CERT, because if he did, I would have heard him. He would have done something, and he hasn't done anything. So I'm all for it, I'm ready to go. But I was looking at some of my notes here in 2012. We had six operational CERT areas. You know, we had Lowell and Wilton area, what we had bought. We had ongoing CERT meetings in all these areas. And the pandemic came along, and of course, that's the one we task with. But since then, it's been let go. No witness has been shown by the fire department. And we need to have CERT classes held here in Kensington. Or in El Cerrito. With Kensington, El Cerrito people do that. And if we're gonna get CERT up again and running again, we need to have certified CERT members. And how do you get that? By having training. You have so many things on your page that you want to check to see what funding had been at one time. That was last time when we had that.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was going to look at the budget. Didn't look at the budget.
To see what if it's a monetary thing and how do we mediate that? That's the problem.
That's a thing too. I also got a Kay Reed reach out to me. And I think also reached out to the chief because she is reorganizing some stuff in CERT Area 6.
I've been talking with Kay.
And I asked her, the chief's interested in the Mondo revitalized CERT cross-jurisdictional getting involvement from people and other things, but we need someone who wants to sink all that time into running it. would you be willing to do it? And she said, yes. And I went, okay. So.
And she asked me about the traffic. Sorry, I talked about the traffic space. So I went home and I said, well, the information on the traffic and put it home. Enjoy. And, but I hadn't spoken to her about, soon after meeting with the chief. But he was, when he said he was interested in me finalizing it. And when she, chatted up with some of the people in Area 6, because Area 6, the people are still, friendly and they're talking more. And plus we have the radio pumps there. So that's still ongoing. And she said she was looking for broadcasters. And so I was trying to introduce her to broadcasters. So she wants to work on this. That's great. That's great. But we've got to take a number of people to work on it. We don't have the emails. We have so many new people in Kensington. We need to have the training class in the whole country again, and we have to start having articles in the bubble, telling people about it and why it's so vital to their, to their well being. And so that's what happens.
Hopefully, I don't know if Scott is still on the call, but maybe we can connect Scott and Kay and maybe yourself.
Johnny has my information.
Okay, and try to get some people who can get together and start getting the ball rolling and think about it between meetings, because I am full up on Kensington.
Does Kay understand the concept that the chief was proposing?
I mean, that's a fun question. What? Who knows? What anyone knows, but.
He was going to get back to the people in that meeting.
But his vision.
And he was going to put all this in that together, and he was going to get back to me, and he never got back to me.
But he articulated the vision as it relates to syrup. And it's a, it's not the El Segundo Fire Department doing syrup. It's a nonprofit entity, 501c3, approach similar to what they do.
Since Johnny does have a hard stop, let's have the EPC committee coordinator report, Johnny, and then we can circle back to more discussion on this if we want to later.
Okay, so, Candace, can you enable my share screen capabilities, please?
I think I just did.
Okay, I was probably just a little too fast. Just one sec. Okay, so here's the emergency preparedness report for our committee meeting April 2024. We have the shredding event this Saturday at the Unitarian Church parking lot next to the temporary fire station from 10 to noon. I'll be there between 9 o'clock to 9:15-ish to set up and meet the shredding vendor. People usually start queuing up at around 9:30. So if anyone's interested in coming by to help or just say hello on your walk, you're welcome to stop by. Adrienne, if you're free on Saturday, you can come by too if you want. I mean, no major commitment. But if you're in the area and you want to stop by, it'd be nice to meet you, and welcome to the committee.
Just a question. I had a call today from a citizen of El Cerrito asking if this is for Kensington residents only. Since that's what I sort of read, I said yes, it's for residents only.
I try to keep this targeted to Kensington as much as I can. That's why I only put it to the next door account that only goes to residents that have addresses in Kensington. An update for Kensington Firewise. We have Tilden Firewise being established, and they started their application. Tilden Firewise is along the Berkeley and Tilden Park boundary, comprised of Cannon Drive, Parkside Court, and Plateau Drive. I let Berkeley Fire know that we've started the application there, and Berkeley is working toward FireWise development in the same area on their side. So there will be some opportunity to work together for community engagement like block parties. So I'm hoping there will be an opportunity when the weather gets a little better that we can kind of have commingling in that area, and that we can continue that on. Here's the new map. In the yellow area, just above Berkeley, and in the red area, hopefully we can have a lot more coordination with Berkeley and those in on along the Berkeley Kensington border. So here's the updated map. We did pick up a new area that had put an inquiry through that was driven from the insurance non-renewals. It's Columbia Drive or Columbia Avenue. So I've sent the resident some initial information, and we've been in contact trading emails. So she's going to take it to her contact list on the street and see what kind of leadership team that she can pull together to establish a FireWise there. But so far we have, yes.
Is there some guidelines on how large a FireWise community should be? I'm just looking at this map and it looks a little, are we allowed to say balkanized anymore? Split up into like lots of little things. And does it make sense to have like, I guess I just don't know what the FireWise guidelines are. Is it supposed to be only like 12 houses? Because it seems sort of weird to have like 12 houses contiguous with another 12 houses in a different FireWise, contiguous with another 12 houses in a different FireWise.
Yeah. So the answer from Cal Fire was that they'd like it to have a little bit more smaller groups, but the minimum was about a dozen. I think they said 14, which was a funny number to me. So yeah, that's why it's going to be a little colorful on the map. Because the other interesting thing about Kensington is that these areas all already kind of exist in their own, you know, block areas already. So when you see areas like Wildcat established, that was kind of already existing based on their block organization for National Night Out. And Maybeck was kind of the same with their road association. And we're seeing the same way with Tilden based on the connections that they have in that pocket. So it's actually good to have that because it's established. There may be opportunities where we can grow outside those boundaries if the relationships are there. But I think the way Kensington is historically with these footprints already existing, we should just capitalize on that because they kind of have their own little cultural areas imprinted in it already.
Makes so, total sense. I totally, my neighborhood's up there, and I agree that it's definitely how we function too. So
yeah.
Okay, thank you for answering.
Well, I talked to Rick Artis yesterday after the meeting, and he realized he wasn't in Wildcat, and wish he was, and so he's interested in being in a little FireWise group, and I was wondering if maybe he's good to meet up with the east side of Highland.
Doesn't he live in that like little gap between Maybeck and Wildcat?
Yes. Yes.
Wait, which street is he? Is he on?
Arlmont? Is it
Arlmont? Yeah, I think he's. Yeah, I think he's just west of the boundary of Wildcat FireWise.
Southeast. He's southeast of the. He is south of the southeastern duck. Am I looking? Yeah, that is southeast. So his property is next door to the school.
Okay.
So so anyway.
Okay.
You might want to get a hold of him and explore that.
Yeah. He's interested in, you know.
And the other question he asked, or I had asked, that came up last night too, was whether you could actually get the school in. And I know Maybeck said they didn't want to get the school involved, or if they couldn't, I can't remember.
Yeah, I think there was a couldn't part. I think that it was involving schools was outside of the program, mm-hmm. FireWise.
Okay.
We were able to get the Unitarian Church incorporated into Wildcat. So,
okay.
Any other
the
questions?
The school's not for sure.
Yeah, the school is not part of Maybach Firewise.
No, but can they be part of the Firewise group?
That would be good to explore. I did reach out to who reached out? I had a conversation with the principal, but I think it was a different topic. I think the Maybach, I think, had initial conversations with them, but you can see it was established about it. So, but I think there's also conversations that had to be going through like the West Contra Costa School District to do that. So there's a lot more involvement than just, hey, you're my neighbor. I think there's board considerations there with the West County.
Here's a stupid question that probably I should answer to. Who owns the land the school is on? Is it the county or West Contra Costa Unified School District? Does the school district own the land?
Which I think means the state ultimately school property system.
Okay.
Or the county system. No.
Okay. So it could be some complicated
situation. Maybe I can try and make inroads on that drawing with the school. I finally saw the principal for the first time in a while. So
we should go back in time when we used to have a park committee and we do the cleaning up in the highways that we got. And when we wanted to do trees, we couldn't do that right now.
Right. Makes sense. Well, that makes sense, but I understand. All right, Johnny, you want to keep going?
Okay. I've got a few photos to share. The site that was finished, the hazardous plant removal on the end of Purdue. This resident had a lot of overgrown juniper, as you can see here. And this is that area removed the juniper. So he did a lot of work. He's in the area of Kensington that have the larger properties. So most of his front area was all just overgrown juniper. And here's some of the stuff it was like really woody, a lot of, you know, dead branches, overgrown stuff that he had pulled out of there. So I know he did a lot of hard work in that area. But there were some project challenges I mentioned on the last meeting, that some residents are unable to do a lot of the work themselves. Some of them may need assistance with funding or cost sharing, and some don't have the tools to do the work. And also the wood chips and tan bark and mulch seem to be also a concern with a lot of the wooden houses that have wood chips around. So I'll be writing up a recommendation for retooling this program to the board. So if anybody has any other concerns or considerations for this program going forward, please let me know so I can include that.
John?
So, yeah.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
This fund was initially created with a measly $5,000. Kevin Payton got a raise to $25,000. Is it fair to ask roughly how much of that is left and it would be worth touting the successes of the program to get more money if that would help?
Well, I think...
Because not in
terms of... Yeah, I think we just need to revisit the program about how we're approaching the removal. And I think it'll be more effective if we help with the removal portion and not the replacement.
This is a crazy idea, but I know that the Parks KPCSD has this person, Fernando, who does all this work for the park. And my understanding is he always likes having more jobs. Is there, not to talk about the districts working together, perish the thought, but is there an opportunity here maybe to see if we can do something joint between the fire district and the parks district, where maybe we could try to see if we could sort of line up a bunch of these projects for the contractor that the parks district is already connected to, and see if Fernando is willing to take on some of these projects, and then this district can subsidize Fernando. This is a crazy idea. I haven't thought it through, but All I know is that there's a person in Kensington who works for a Kensington district already who does landscaping and groundskeeping and management, and that person is not connected to this board, but maybe they shouldn't be. I should talk to the president of the KPPCSD about that.
I would defer to general manager to speak an answer.
But Johnny's.
Yeah.
That would be out of my purview of expertise.
Yeah, understood.
Well, I mean, Johnny's point, I think, is that if you want to reapproach this by allocating money for removal as opposed to replanting, that might be a greater incentive to have residents do the work. And if they want to do it through a contract with, you know, Fernando or like to, you know, that would be fine. But I think the first question is, does the fire district board want to change the approach on this as opposed to funding for replanting and switch it over to funding for removal?
I can speak this part for the board. I can definitely speak to, which is bring us a proposal and then we'll consider it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is so money an issue? Yeah.
Are you saying
to go back to my question?
So someone needs to be the district.
Is money an issue now? I mean, I know what it was initially with one resident having been helped. I have no idea what it's down to. I mean, I don't need to know the exact dollar amount, but is that something that's all of a sudden going to rear its ugly face and it hasn't been allocated? Or does that need to be brought up one way or another?
We're also having our budget meeting in May, so we're about to make the new budget for the year. So we're almost at the end of the fiscal year.
As long as I think of it.
Yeah.
Because last time it almost slipped through.
Yes.
I remember that specifically. It just didn't get it.
And we can amend the budget throughout the year. There's no rule that we have to have the entire budget for the year ironclad at the beginning of this.
Well, since this whole concept's out of the committee, I mean,
that's right.
Does the committee want to make a recommendation to the board that they approach it differently, pay for removal of the juniper or whatever, as opposed to paying for the replanting?
I guess I misunderstood. I thought we were paying for the removal.
No, it's just the replanting.
No, it's just replanting.
Oh, planting
priorities. That's
Johnny's point.
Oh, I misunderstood. Thank you. I wasn't understanding that.
No, I agree with the new approach Johnny's suggesting, because I think many homeowners don't have the wherewithal to remove things themselves. And having a program where they would be reimbursed to have a contractor do it would get more results.
Yeah, I would think so. And the motivation for this wasn't really because we want beautification in Kensington with lots of new plantings. The goal from the fire district's perspective is the abatement of hazardous vegetation. So we care more about the removal than what goes in after, as long as you don't put something crazy.
So I think getting a proposal from Johnny would be wise for us to look at.
Yeah, that would be great.
Move up to the board.
That sounds like a great idea.
Anything else?
No.
Okay. And then the evacuation is your responsibility campaign update. I have sent the final files to Mailstream in Concord for them to print out a live proof for me to review. So that way I can see the design physically and it's not just a digital proof. So if I need to make any adjustments, I can take care of that. The magnets were eliminated from the campaign. I don't know if everyone's aware of that, but just as an update. So the brochures will be going out as soon as I'm able to approve the physical proofs and get them all printed and organized to be sent out to each respective zone. So I'm targeting that to be an on track in the end of May, beginning of June.
And Johnny, I noticed a few typos at the presentation to the board, and I meant to email you, and I forgot to email you, so...
Yeah, I was just going to remind you.
Thank you.
And Johnny, did you add the word wildfire as...
Yep.
Sign?
Yep, wildfire is on the cover.
Awesome.
And if there's any questions, that concludes my report. Can you let me email me?
To go.
What's that?
Public. Public comment.
That's good. Thanks, John.
Any public comment? Great. Thanks, Johnny. We move on to reports from committee members. Do we have any reports that people would like to give about their activities?
I can just state quickly that the phone bite system I implemented for Lake Drive South approximately 3 years ago. I tested it again this weekend. If people don't remember what that is, it's a mass messaging system where the call originator just makes the emergency call to, it could be thousands literally of people. And you record your message live in on your computer or with a phone, and then you can hit a button and it will go out to a countless number of people. So I just tested annually to make sure it's working. And the last test, which I did last weekend, went to 67 different households, phones, that because it includes landlines, cell phones, whatever people wanted to subscribe to. And they get the message. It takes me about 4 minutes to decide to do it, sit down, record a message, push a button, send it out. And of the 67 people I sent it to, it successfully was transmitted immediately to, not immediately, I take that back, but it's one of the potential pitfalls, but usually it's within minutes, to all but three different phones, and I've solved two of the problems with that. So it's just money. It's a very effective system. It's the one that Wildcat Watch uses, or uses it too, although it's never really been needed. And if anybody's interested in looking into the system, you can just contact me, or more probably better is look up phonebite.com. Describes the whole thing.
So they ask what the name of the system.
Phonebite. Yeah, so their website is phonebite.com. And the cost of the thing is a nickel call. So I just sent it out to almost 70 people and it cost me $3.50. Pretty cheap. That's good. It's phone bite, B-I-T-E, one word. Not E, that's pretty good. I don't know.
All right. Is there anything else we want to discuss?
We're just talking back to the cert. Where do we go from here as far as trying to develop what the chief had wanted us to do? That was set up a meeting, a town hall meeting, to try to promote the sort of concept and the like. Is it still want to try to pursue that?
I think that yes.
He was left in the chief's court.
We should finish. And I think I have to say, what Dave was bringing up earlier is really important. Chief's concept of a CERT organization is not your basic ground grassroots kind of thing. It's a very involved thing. I think that I don't mind saying, I said it to him personally sometime, that that's going to be a hard sell in a community that a much simpler structure slip away, to all of a sudden try to create a dinner, a little city with all kinds of departments that do this and do that. Scotland's great, and apparently Sacramento has done it, and that's what he's familiar with.
Mm-hmm.
But Sacramento is a little bit bigger than we have, and it's just different. And I think that I personally think he needs to realize that, and I'm not sure he does, because he hasn't backed off of that plan, at least publicly.
No, and it does point to a rhythm or order, which does have that concept and uses that for 1-2-3.
What concept is that?
They have a non-profit CERT program, and they have private citizens do the training.
John, you have a comment?
Yeah, I just wanted to update. So as Richard Rosenthal mentioned, that we met with Chris Hilliard and Battalion Chief Jose Castrojón to talk about CERT and just kind of get everyone on the same page locally who's, so that way the idea is to kind of interact and engage on a broader scale. So we're going to be coordinating with, or at least meeting with Albany and finding out what's going on with Richmond too. Richmond has a staff member that does handle a lot of the CERT and emergency preparedness activities over there. But we're kind of putting our feelers out there now that we have the opportunity after some students have gone through the class to get onto the next level of interacting with our surrounding agencies. So that's, things are happening. I know it seems like nothing's happening on the surface, but in the background, we are making progress. The last year it was the goal to get students to attend the class, even though it is in La Mirinda. And it seems to be the goal to bring that on this side of the hill, so that we can have a lot more interaction for people that don't have to go out of the community to get the training. So that's still the trajectory. I just wanted to update you.
John, did Richmond actually advertise that they were going to start training about, I believe it was 2 years ago? I talked to somebody there about it to see if Kensington residents could get in on that training. And basically I told no. Unless they were just opening to the last minute and she never called back and she was supposed to, if there were, do you know if that's, is that ongoing? Are they now annually, for example?
I haven't looked that deep into it. Yeah, I haven't looked into what Richmond is doing recently, but I do know that 2 years ago they had a different director over there. So I don't know if there's been a changing of the guard, which has, but you know, I honestly don't know what the situation there with that training, what happened there. But from what the fire department says is that they're having a lot more cross jurisdictional intercoordination. They want to have this more of like the one team feel and mentality in the East Bay or in the western side of the county. So I'll find out what that looks like with engaging Richmond and their training program, and I'll report back.
Thanks.
You're welcome.
So brief, it sounds like we're still interested in pushing on this concept.
Whatever that concept is.
My take on all of these sort of big project ideas, especially that involve lots of volunteers, more exclusively volunteers, is you sort of have to start small with these things and just get something going and let it take its sort of natural life cycle. I don't think you can create anything like what the chief wants on any time scale that we can talk about right now, but we can get a nucleus and that can either expand or fizzle. And
that's why I brought up Richmond, because I think I'm not sure, recently got this kind of program that you described going. Mm-hmm. So they started at a small nucleus and spread out. Just not going to build New York City.
No, but you need to have a concept that everybody agrees upon. Mm-hmm. Whether the concept is the chief's concept or some other concept. Right now,
it's just right now.
Well, I think the nucleus needs to determine that for itself. Yes. Also, before we go to that, John, did you want to add something really quickly?
Yeah, and just to follow up on the point that you made, Daniel, was starting small is where the success is, and that's what we're seeing with the FireWise. Because everything, like I said before, the footprint of the blocks in Kensington, it already exists in its own, it's the strongest culture in the community where people are getting their information is relying on the neighbors. And as we layer in with the FireWise communities, then we can go back and also say, this is what we're going to do with CERT. And it kind of exists in the same footprint. So I envision that just being replicated over and over again. And that's how we roll things out through the communities, through the blocks, through the, those little territories within Kensington. So you're right.
Public comment. Scott.
Just on the CERT portion, one thing I'm interested in trying to do is to try to just get in contact with everybody who's already a certified CERT member and try to get some kind of meeting with just the initial group and kind of maybe look at where we're at. Do we know who owns the list of existing CERT members?
Chris Hilliard.
Go on, Johnny.
Chris Hilliard, the program manager. I'll connect you, Scott.
Okay. I dealt with him a long time ago when I went to training, but okay, great.
Fireworks districts are the only threads that are balkanized here. Also, the CERT groups. I think there's not necessarily a central list of all the people, but also reach out to. I have your email now, so I can reach out to Kay Reed and see if she can connect with you. Maybe also.
Yeah, I have actually a meeting with Kay and the two folks in the K6 area setting up a meeting with them, and we would have been there on Saturday. Mm-hmm. The meeting with running the chief, and we met with Chris today, trying to identify all of the stakeholders. And the idea of a public meeting, talking about mm-hmm. really to get the ideas of what everybody wants to do.
Yeah.
Because until we know the structure.
Great. We are you two connected, Scott? I don't know your name.
My name is Richard Rosenthal. I don't know Scott. I looked at his name. I'll get that after the meeting.
Okay.
Great. But I've spent about a month now trying to identify stakeholders, talking to people and the chiefs. The fire department chiefs, also Chief Cosby-Hone, is working with the fire department chiefs mm-hmm. to talk about what their interest level is in this as well.
I also heard a noise, actually, I think it was from the chief, that Albany CERT.
Albany has a 501c3 CERT, which is what AFD chief said would work better because they don't have the resources to do that. House. Mm-hmm. Richmond has an in-house. I talked to Oakland chief over the weekend. Mm-hmm. They do it in-house. It makes sense to find out what everybody's doing rather than rebuild the building from ground up.
I think with the noise that the chief made to me that Albany service was interested in just expanding its footprint if we wanted to
makes sense to talk about partnerships before
yeah.
we start.
Yeah, exactly.
We have that kind of stuff.
Yeah. Great. You two connect. This is great. I'm loving it. Sounds like I'm sorry, any other public comment?
No.
If that's all.
I just want to let folks know that Candace is moving on in her work, and May 10th is her last day with our district. I want to recognize mm-hmm. the good work she does supporting us.
Thank you.
Good luck.
Thank you.
And I think if there's nothing else, then we are.
Mm-hmm.